know thyself. Above all things, speak the truth. Do nothing to excess.
Well, good evening, listeners. This is Karen Tate from Voices of the Sacred Feminine. I want to welcome you to the show and thank you for tuning in, whether you're across town or across the globe, because I know you're very busy. And I want to thank Elaine Redman for allowing me to use her wonderful music, which that was just a tiny little tease that you heard opening the show there, but we will play the whole piece later on in honor of Lane, who is one of my guests tonight. Author of When the Drummers Are Women. She's going to be discussing with me tonight, revising and expanding When the Drummers Were Women with more images, video links, MP3 files as an ebook. We're going to talk about why it's so important to preserve and restore women's lost history. And then after our chat, we will have a local for mother on the show, Ava Park. Ava's the founder and presiding priestess of the Goddess Temple of Orange County down here in Los Angeles, well, south of Los Angeles, actually, if you're not familiar with the terrain here in Southern California. And our topic is transgenders and goddess spirituality. I guess considering what has been hot in the news these last couple days with President Obama coming out saying he is for, supports gay marriage, it's interesting that we're going to be talking about something like that, because Ava has stated publicly that she believes that transgendered people are some of the most cruelly oppressed people in our American culture. So we will be talking about that tonight as well. And as many of you know, adversaries of the sacred feminine tried to sweep away awareness and knowledge of her for all time. And with that sweeping away, when the great she was made to disappear because of the religion of patriarchy, of selfish and disconnected men and their war gods, well, women and their power, their leadership, their spiritual authority were thwarted, repressed, became taboo, diminished, disrespected. That's why here on the show I'm dedicated to recovering the great she, whether she be deity, archetype, or ideal in your mind. Yes, here we intend to defy, to taste the forbidden fruit, to be powerful and uppity women, to throw off the shackles and look under every rock, behind every locked door. We'll peer into the abyss of the past so we know why things are the way they are today, how they've come to be turned on their head and have become so unnatural. And we're going about setting things right. Why? Well, because if we want to save ourselves as a species, I think we have no other choice. If we want to restore balance, harmony, wholeness, sanity, it's women and our like-minded brothers armed with ideas of the sacred feminine who will set things back on course. And just a reminder, because you tell me you like to hear it, our two mottos for the show. The first is all truth passes through three stages. First, it's ridiculed. Second, it's violently opposed. And third, it's accepted for being self-evident. And the other is from Gandhi. First, they ignore you. Then they laugh at you. Then they fight you. Then you win. So anyway, I'm not sure at what stage we're at. Maybe it depends on where you live. But they're not ignoring us anymore, and I don't think they're laughing at us. I know from some of the feedback I get, I think they're scratching their head, and sometimes they might actually be a little disturbed by some of the things we say that they'd never heard of, because it's all been swept under the rug, and now it's coming out as women's lost history becomes more prevalent to the mainstream world. So without any further delay, I want to get to my first guest, the wonderful Lane Redman. Lane, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Karen. I'm really happy to be here with you tonight.
Well, I'm so happy you're with us again. It's been a long time. And, you know, just in case some of my listeners out there are new to who you are or don't know your work, let me just read your short bio and then we'll start chatting. So listeners, if you're not familiar with Lane yet, you will be. You'll want to be. She is the author of When the Drummers Were Women, which was described by the New York Times. It was described by the New York Times as a superb percussionist. The Village Voice said that she is one of New York's most perfect musicians. She was voted World Percussionist of the Year by Drum Magazine readers, and her CD, Trance Union, was voted Percussion CD 2 years in a row. Lane's unusual path focuses on the handheld frame drum, the world's oldest known drum. For 15 years, she's researched the history of this drum and religious and healing rites in the ancient Mediterranean world, culminating in her book, When the Drummers Were Women, way back in 1997. This book details a lost history of a time when women were the primary percussionists in the ancient world and also explains why they are not today. For the last 20 years, she's taught a transformative fusion of chanting, rhythmic breathing, and drumming that directly synchronizes the mind-body complex, creating conditions for psychological, physical, and spiritual healing. And her website is her name, Lane, L-A-Y-N-E, Redman.com. So, Lane, we started chatting, actually, before we went live, that you're revising and expanding When the Drummers Were Women?
Yes. Well, it stayed in print for a long time, which was a great thing, and it was published in German. And it was published in Persian in Iran, and it has just been released in Dutch in the Netherlands 2 weeks ago.
Wow.
That was exciting. And I'm revising it, and it's so interesting as I listen to all the things you said, because it was published in 1997, and I had worked on it for about 15 years. And as I go back and revise it, and look at what I was able to say then, the last 20 years there's been such a heavy and specific attack on the early writers about the goddess traditions, like Maria Gimbutas and James Mellart, who excavated Çeyhəlik in what's in Turkey. And it's, you know, I'm finding that I can't say as simply as I could in the 90s the things about the pre-historical traditions that Gimbutas and Mellart and other great writers and archaeologists were saying. And then there was this concerted effort to discredit these archaeologists and historians and researchers. So today you have to sort of defend yourself more when you write about these things. So it's tricky now as I go back and revise it. It's something
that's
unfortunate. I could say simply. Well, it's interesting, though, because here's what's really interesting. So there was this concerted effort for about 20 years in academia and in traditional archaeological circles to destroy these ideas of the earlier archaeologists. And I'm talking about in the 80s and 90s that we're saying this stuff. In the 60s, you could say that these were goddess figurines and traditions based around goddesses, and then it just became, you couldn't say that. You'd destroy your career. And people made their careers on attacking these ideas. But what I want to talk about that's healthy and exciting right now is about, I forget the year that her book came into print, but Joan Connolly's book, Portrait of a Priestess.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with that?
Yes.
So that got published sometime in the last 4 or 5 or 6 years, and it was highly, highly favorably reviewed by the New York Times Review, and she's like a scholar that has tremendous support. She's had a MacArthur grant, and she's also was appointed by George Bush to, I forget exactly what her appointment was, but she's got establishment backing, and she has incredible scholarly credentials, and she's been excavating in Cyprus for many years. And her book is on the Greek priestess, and it was, you know, the first little crack in that sort of exclusionary mindset. And I was really excited to see her book come out and get so favorably reviewed in the media. And then Nicholas Stampoulides, and I may not be saying that right, he is the director of the Cycladic Museum, the Goulandry Museum in Athens. It's a fabulous museum of Cycladic art. And he's been excavating in Crete at Ilithyrna. I think the site is called Otropedra. But he's been excavating there for years and years, and he's the one that has unearthed these incredible pieces of gold jewelry depicting bee goddesses, and he is calling his site a dynasty of priestesses.
Wow.
And, you know, when suddenly, I mean, my website was being banned as an occult and dangerous site because of the word bee priestess. That
wow.
happened several times.
Well, Lynn,
so,
I'm wondering, where is this coming from? Is it conservative academia? Is it, you know, is it Christianity? Is it right-wing fear-mongering? Do you have any idea, or is it a little of all of it?
It's probably a little of all of it. You know what? I don't think about it, Karen. You can't think about that stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
too
you really
much.
Can't. You just have to do
no,
what you know you have to do.
No, you can't get involved in thinking about that. You keep going. And the thing is that, I think there's automatic words that set off those filtering. You know, big companies like Comcast will hire a company that's going to filter and keep their clients safe from pornographic or dangerous websites, and there's certain automatic words. They don't even really look at the websites, but if these words come up like priestess,
mm-hmm.
you know, then they just get an automatic banning. Once you get in touch with them, ask them to go to look at your site, they take it. You know, they stop filtering your site because they can see you're not a dangerous site.
So how do you find out if your site's being filtered?
Well, I start getting emails from people who are on Comcast, or they may be in Michigan and they're a high school teacher, and so they have internet access through the educational system, and they'll say, I can't reach your website. Or I stopped at Charlotte Airport in North Carolina and tried to go on the free, that's how I found out the first time. I tried to go on my website to check something, and it came out, you know, cult, dangerous cult site.
Oh, my
we
God.
We won't allow you access to it. I was so shocked and devastated. But all it took was calling them. I didn't know that at the time. I thought
okay.
it was much more.
Well, that's
it
good to know. If any of our listeners out there, or myself, or any of the women in our community end up in that fix, you know, we know we can
contact the filtering company, and they'll go and see that there's nothing dangerous there. But it's interesting that's the only thing that I could figure that was on the site that would ban it was the word bee priestess. But anyway, it's shifted.
But it's shifted now. Okay.
It's shifted, and that's what we should focus on, that these people that are in the upper echelons of the archaeological world, and you have to realize that those worlds are funded by people who have money.
Mm-hmm.
So the people who have money are funding this. They're saying it's okay at this point to allow this research to come out. I think that's fabulous.
Maybe this is all part of the paradigm shift, the transparency that, you know, we kept, you know, feeling we were going to start to see, you know.
I don't know, but it also means that I feel like I have to be really careful, like when I go back and revise my book and be very careful and be very careful and say things very clearly that can be verified and not exaggerate based on my feelings, you know,
right.
about things. But
right.
anyway, I don't want to get off too much in that, but that's a very important thing that's happening right now. And so I'm revising When the Drummers Were Women to be an ebook, and we'll have more images and video links and MP3 files. So as people go through the book, of course, they're going to they're going to have a pretty fancy e-book reader. Unlike me, I have none at this point. You know, I've been having to, you know, it's funny because I'm highly technical in video. If I couldn't do all the things that I'm doing online and editing and shooting video, you probably wouldn't know that much about me at this point. But as the world has shifted, I've been able to shift into that world and continue to reach out into the world through the internet, through video. And now it's all coming together, the video and the spoken word and the sound files. And I mentioned to you before we went on the air that there's a magazine called Percussive Notes, and it's put out by the Percussive Arts Society, and that is a wonderful academic-based organization. They put on a big conference every year, so it's it originally started out as classical orchestral university college-based music programs, and over the years, jazz came in, and then rock came in, and then world percussion came in. And the editor is a big supporter of mine. It's wonderful because I've had people who have become big supporters of me, and they have the printed magazine. 5,000 copies go out to the members, but they have now gone into an interactive online magazine too. So they asked me to do the first cover story for their first interactive online magazine. So I had 12 video links in there and 3 MP3 files, and I wrote a 9,000 word article basically for the academic percussion world how my career happened as a frame drummer. And I was just lucky that there were people there videotaping us all along from the mid-'80s.
Yeah,
all
so
along.
You can go back and use all that footage.
I am. I'm using it. And it's just amazing. So that inspired me to do that when the drummers were women and adding a lot of video and everything in. So that's very exciting. That's what I'm doing now. People will really be able to experience it on visual and an auditory level at the same time.
Well, Nellie, you were saying too that, I mean, you're really getting serious about this. I mean, you want to create a virtual museum, and
I am. So, okay, so in the early 80s, I started. I don't know how much I want to go backtrack and go into how I got started, because that's all someplace where people can see it. But I got started with a frame drum in 1981, and my teacher was Glenn Velez, and he had collected about 200 images of the ancient frame drummers from the Mediterranean world. So I started helping him organize it because I majored in art and photography, and I was duplicating his slides and looking at them. And, you know, it took maybe 2 years, and I go, you know what? All the drummers were women. What's going on? You know? And so then I had to start studying the inscriptions on the images. They were sculptures and vase paintings and little temple wall engravings. And so I started studying it, and they turned out to be goddesses. Tchibeli from Anatolia.
So you taught yourself Greek or any of the ancient
languages?
I wish.
No, I don't.
Okay.
No, I can't. It would be great if I could read Sumerian and Greek and Egyptian hieroglyphs and everything. But I didn't. I read, you know, translations, and I read visual evidence. I traveled throughout the Mediterranean world. I traveled throughout Greece and Turkey, going to little museums, taking photographs of the frame drummers. I went to Syria. I went to Egypt a number of times. Cyprus I go to quite a bit. Cyprus was a real hot spot of frame drummers and the priestesses of Aphrodite. I went to Crete. I went to Italy, Spain, and I went to the major museums throughout Europe, not all of them, of course, but many of them, and then in the United States and Metropolitan and other places. And now the internet, oh, my God, you know what, I can sit down tonight. I could sit down and go online and find 20 or 30 new frame drum images because, first of all, right before I came on this trip, I went on Flickr, and somebody has created a pool of ancient Greek and Roman musical images. So people from all over the world put their images up of ancient Greek musicians or ancient Roman musicians. And I found so many things because people are going to museums all over Italy and all over the world. All over the world. It's so exciting. So anyway, I did that for years. I have thousands of slides. But here's the key point. Slides. They are slides. They're not.
So you have to
images.
Digitize them or something.
Yes. Oh my God. So when they wanted to publish the book in the Netherlands, I had to take the 260 images from the original when the drummers were women and digitalize them. But the great thing about that, Karen, is that I could improve the images much better because I'm really great at Photoshop. I could balance. I could just make them a lot better.
That's good.
So the images are much better than what was printed and when the drummers were women. Plus, I've just accumulated so many more. Anyway,
it's
amazing. But, you know, what we want to create is this. First, we have to digitalize all my thousands of slides. And then we have to create this virtual museum, an internet archive of these images so that women all over the world can see them, women and men. And on Facebook, now I've got to figure out the next step because I've reached the 5,000 friend limit and I have thousands of people connected to me from Iran and Turkey and Syria even. It's so sad as all the horrible things are going on in Syria and people email me from there and they try to play their drum and keep their spirits up in the middle of like the collapse of that country into civil war. But all through the Middle East and the Mediterranean and all over Europe and into South America and all over the United States is this network of frame drummers that have come into being. And we want to create some way to connect a community around the archive where people can upload they can add to the archive, sort of like a Wikipedia. It'll have to be, you know, there'll have to be somebody helping oversee that, you know, so that it stays orderly and there'll be a form that all the information about
Yeah, because you can't sap your creative flow to do that sort of, you know, administrative work, you know.
Well, it's like I can't even bring myself to scan all those images, but it takes money. And I've had some health challenges in the last 4 years, and so I don't travel as much anymore. And some of my students have created a foundation for me called When the Drummers Were Women, and we're almost a nonprofit, not yet, but we're in the process. And then, you know, they're going to raise the money to have somebody sit there and scan and me oversee it because, unfortunately, the information is in my head on most of those slides. I didn't write them on the slide. Or I know where the information is. But it's very exciting to, this is just for your readers because it's not.
Hello? Lane. Well, I hope she figures out that I think she disconnected herself. Lane. Well, what I am going to do, listeners, until she can get back to us, is I am going to go ahead and play a little bit more of her final Delphic Oracle, and then hopefully she'll call back in and we'll resume the conversation. My apologies, listeners.
Above all things, speak the truth. Do nothing to excess. Accept the gifts the gods have given you.
Wait, you're back?
could hear you the whole time.
Oh, you know what? And I couldn't, we couldn't hear you. You were, somehow you were gone. Okay,
so
well, you're back now.
I'm back.
Thank you. Thank you for calling back. Anyway, you were saying...
Okay, this is just a little sneak preview only for your listeners tonight, but if they want to, after the talk is over, go to this new website, whenthedrummerswerewomen.com, and they can watch the video that was released in the Netherlands and see so many of these images and so much footage of women drummers from all over the world. It's not officially released yet, but it's there. And they could see that tonight. And
oh,
they could
wonderful.
Join. Yeah, they could also sign up for the mailing list to see when we officially launch that site, because there'll be a lot more footage of women drummers, and it'll be really exciting when we release it here. But that's
okay.
Just a sneak preview special for your listeners tonight.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
So all right, so you, and obviously listeners can donate to your almost nonprofit as well.
That's right. Well, it's actually, there's a, it's the Covenant of the Goddess. It's Jade Rivers Organization is acting as an umbrella for us right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's RCG, Reformed Congregation of the Goddess. All right, wonderful.
Yeah.
I'm glad you have that that help. So, I think I know, but I'd rather hear it from your lips. So why is it so important that we restore women's lost history? And, you know, and so that, you know,
it's
these
a part
priests...
of ourselves, Karen, that's been cut away and hidden, and it's when we restore it, we're restoring a part of ourselves. And it's also, it's like I talk about in this video, it's when I saw Karen Carpenter, I was 14 years old, and she was drumming on TV, and I said, oh my God, that's what I want to do. And my mother said, oh honey, the drums are for boys, stick with
mm-hmm.
your tap dancing. But, you know, and Karen Carpenter, I've watched a lot of videos of her recently. She was such a great drummer, and she was a great, great singer. And it's really quite a tragedy. She was forced off the drums and, you know, forced to be that lead singer and, you know, but yet never feeling that she was really good enough. It's interesting. But she was a fabulous, I mean, you know, that music wasn't, I mean, it was the 70s and psychedelics, and you know, their music was so perfectly beautiful, it wasn't what I listened to all the time, but I have a whole new respect for her and her talents and who she was and what she could do. And that's when women see women doing something, they realize they can do it.
Yeah,
that's
give them permission to try or follow
exactly.
their own dream and
exactly.
be their authentic self.
And it's such a powerful thing to be, the frame drum was at the core of all the ancient Mediterranean religions, and it was at the core of the liturgies and the core of the rites and the core of the mystery schools. It created the trance state in which the symbolic death and rebirth could happen in the mystery schools. So it was it's an incredible powerful technology to wield.
So, Lane, how do you? I mean, there's not that much left, at least not that I'm aware of. You know, maybe you've uncovered a lot more than I know about. But how do you find out? You know what the rhythm sounded like, or can you? I mean, can you recreate?
No, we don't know what rhythms they played. We do not know what rhythms they played, but we know exactly how their drums sounded because they sound exactly the same today. And because I'm an experienced drummer and I can look at how they're holding it and some of the depictions, especially in the Greek vases, you can tell really what strokes and what sounds that they're getting out of the drum, because I know exactly what the drum sounds like anywhere you hit it on the head, because anywhere you hit it is a different sound, but I know exactly what those sounds are. But no, we can never know what the rhythms were that they played, but we can know a whole lot about the rituals and how the drums were used. And then, because I've spent all my life drumming, I have had all the experiences that you have that come to you through drumming, and I've also been to a lot of places around the world where there are still festivals of drumming, but not only just drumming, but of frame drumming. Like in Brazil, there's a whole festival which is really a remnant of the Dionysian ritual. It's a sacred bull, just like Dionysus was a sacred bull, and he was ripped to shreds and then resurrected by the power of the frame drum, and that's exactly what's going on in the Bumba Me Boi Festival in Maranhão in Brazil, and I went to that festival.
What spirituality is that? Is that Yoruba?
It's so amazing. It's a fusion of the Portuguese Catholicism and the African religious deities, Iemanjá. I mean, like on the bowls that are made to be worn over a dancer's head, they are embroidered images of Adam and Eve and Iemanjá. And I talked to one of the leaders of the group, and he explained it to me this way. The festival is in honor of St. John the Baptist. It's on his birthday, but it's also near the summer solstice. And he explained that St. John, and this is a man from a village, and so it's the Indian, the indigenous Indian traditions, the African slave traditions, and the Portuguese Catholic traditions that preserve some of the ancient frame drumming traditions, because they have the frame drums in Portugal, and the women still play them there. So he explained to me that St. John is the king of heaven, and the African deities go back and forth between St. John and the human realm and communicate with the humans. So it's you know, it's their own thing,
their own
that came
take on
out
it.
Of all of that fusion. And it was extremely powerful to be there in that festival and have the experience of what that's really like, because it's very different than I imagined. It was completely different than I imagined. It's very exhausting.
Let's backtrack a minute. You started saying that, you know, because of your vast experience, you said that, you used the phrase, it was something like the experiences you have when you drum. Is that something you can elaborate on a little bit? Are you talking about mystical experiences?
Well, it depends on how you define mystical, but certainly drumming is it's the core of all of our religions is shamanistic drumming, and that enables people to go into a trance and in traditional shamanistic thought, you could go into the underworld or you could go into the upper worlds and gather information, you know, and you could take the form of a sacred bird or a sacred serpent and get this information and bring it back to the people around you to find out what was wrong with someone or wrong with the weather or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the roots of all of this.
I'm just curious, because I haven't experienced, you know, something like that yet, because I'm not a drummer, although it's funny that you talked about Karen Carpenter, because I, too, when I was a young woman, thought the drums were the thing I wanted to do, but my parents said, oh, they're too noisy, no way are we going to buy those for you, and, you know, the opportunity sort of, you know, just dissipated. But what I'm curious about is, you know, for listeners, would a ritual, and I'm using that word very loosely, you said, like, you know, the bird would come back with the information. I guess what I'm saying is, when people are drumming, is it like in another kind of a ritual where people don't drum, where you sort of set the intention for almost like a guided meditation, and does everyone sort of, you know, go on this guided meditation together, or is it a very individual thing that just develops in your own mind as you're doing the drumming and you go into trance?
We could have a whole 3 or 4 hour conversation about this, but let me say quickly, from the scientific point of view, that if we're talking about our brain wave patterns and we're talking about our everyday outwardly focused beta, if we close our eyes and go into a more meditative state, that's alpha. And if we go below that, that's theta. So our thoughts are rhythms, and they are getting slower and slower and slower. And below theta is delta, and that's sleep or unconsciousness. But theta is in the state where people experience these mystical sensations of being one with everything, or they exhibit paranormal abilities. They can see into the future and the past, or they experience sort of spontaneous healings, physical, mental, or emotional. So having a predominance of theta brainwaves is really great. It's an expanded state of learning. We often solve problems in it. Now, the big problem with it is we can't stay awake in theta very long, most of us. We only experience it when we're falling asleep or waking up in that strange hypnagogic dream imagery where the conscious and unconscious mind interface. However, if you train yourself like a form of meditation, of cutting your thoughts, like Zen meditation for 15 to 20 years. You sit on your cushion, training yourself to stay awake in theta, cutting your thoughts, and staying awake. However, there's another way to drive your brain waves into theta, into this very beneficial state, and that's by having them auditorily driven thereby a rhythmic sound.
Okay.
So that's why all over the world there are rituals where drumming creates this unified state of consciousness between everybody listening, because everybody's brain waves are being driven into the same state and then driven down into the theta state. Now, when you add that to simple dance steps, which are also very common in these kind of ritual festivals. So you're dancing, you're stepping, say, to the right and with the left leg over, then the left and the right leg over, back and forth, simple steps, crossing the body line, creating coherence between the right and left hemisphere of the brain. That enhances this whole experience of going into theta and keeping you awake and enabling you to do this for hours and hours. Because I go to this festival in Brazil, and the dancing and the chanting and the drumming goes on for a month, and it goes on, and you know, you get exhausted, but you keep doing these steps and it keeps you in this state. And it's also, it keeps you out of a conceptual state. It's like a brainwashing. It gives you a complete break from your normal, busy, habitual mind. And these are poor people doing this in Brazil, and it sort of gives them a tremendous break from the cares and worries of their life. But in ancient Greece and Egypt and Sumer, it was used in these mystery schools and the death and rebirth rites of Eleusis and Isis and Osiris and Demeter and Persephone and Cybele and Attis and Adonis and Aphrodite. So it's a way to move the conscious mind out of the way and let the, say, the liturgy or the chanting of the priest or priestess, like you were saying, a guided meditation, let their words go deep, deep into the unconscious mind and take people into this deep journey through the labyrinth of the unconscious, and then the rhythm also brings you safely back out of it. And that's why you see Ariadne, the goddess of the labyrinth, and she's depicted over and over again with a frame drum. Well, what's her string? It's the sound of the frame drum. It's the rhythm that enables you to go through the labyrinth and in and out, and they would dance. Into
very,
the labyrinth. People played the frame drum, so they would dance in and out of the labyrinth. They didn't crawl on the knees like the later Christians. They danced in and out. I tried to quickly drop a bomb of information on you.
That was excellent, and I just love now I know when I see her with the drum and the string is not a literal string. You know, the string is
you don't
the
ever
rhythm.
See her with the string. I've never seen her with the string.
Oh,
I only see her with
the
drum in her hand.
Oh, I thought you said a string.
Well, that's the tradition. She gives Theseus a string, and he goes in and out, and they dance in and out with a rope. But when you look at depictions of her, she's holding a drum many of the time.
Oh, she never has it.
She
never has a string.
I've never seen her holding a string. I've just seen her holding the drum.
The string
is part
of the myth.
And sometimes she doesn't have the drum, and she's just dancing.
Right.
There's so much iconography on the Greek vases. It's the most amazing source, and that's where Joan Connolly is getting so much of her information from the Greek vases and the text, and she's working with the text. So it's, you know, the Greeks, we're getting much more information from them right now. And also there's a lot of information from Egypt, but there's a lot of information that we can look at from the Greek traditions on the bee priestesses, and they were called the Melissas.
Right,
in
right.
Greece and Rome, and they were called the Deborahs in ancient Hebrew.
So,
and then the great.
Well, let me just. You said we're getting a lot of new information out of Egypt too. Are you talking about the work of the priestesses and the drumming in Egypt? Is that what you meant?
Well, I'm not. The thing is that Egypt is still a great storehouse of imagery on the temple walls and in the tombs. So there's still things being excavated all the time there.
Okay.
I haven't seen anything particularly about the priestesses, you know.
Okay.
So, but, well, you know, the information is, imagery is still there and still being unearthed and found. So
okay.
That's a good thing.
Well, and Joan Connolly sounds like somebody I might like to get on the show, too.
I don't know that she would be... She's, you could try. You know, she's in a very scholarly world,
mm-hmm.
and I'm still not, we're still out on the outskirts, dear.
I forget that. It seems so mainstream.
We are the outskirts, and it's a little dangerous, the outskirts.
Oh, so she might not be able
to. I have no idea. I wouldn't speak for her, but I just know that she is in a very high academically respected realm.
Right.
And,
well, she could always come in and talk about her book, whatever she's published in the book.
I have no idea, but
yeah.
I'll be glad to show you how to reach her.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
We'll get into that later, but so talk a little bit more about the ancient Melissa and you said the women were called the Deborahs in the Hebrew tradition, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the Deborahs also were drummers?
Many of them were, yes. Yeah, and many of them are oracles. And we have Deborah the judge that sits under the tree. They never talk about her drum, but the oracles would often sit under the trees. But everybody knows about Miriam and her drum. And I look over my life. I'll be 60 in August, and I've had such an interesting life and all the things that came to me or through me or by me that I was able to look back over the years and say, that's so interesting because it's all connecting. But I started studying yoga when I was 17, and for many years I studied with Swami Bua, South Indian yogi who lived in Manhattan. And he taught me Brahmari, and Brahmari is Sanskrit for bee, like Melissa is Greek for bee, and Brahmari is Sanskrit. And then Brahmari is a pranayama breathing practice, and it's really a humming practice. And I learned it first from him. And then I spent years, maybe 20 years, collecting different Brahmari practices from different teachers. And there's a lot of them. So I have those, and I teach people that Brahmari. And it's a buzzing, humming practice, and it has a tremendous effect on the mind body. Traditionally, it's given to people who have too many thoughts because it cuts the thoughts. So it's really good to do it before sleep, and it's good to do it before meditating. And it's a heart chakra practice. It's good for the heart. Some of the hospitals in India now are teaching women that are pregnant to do Brahmari, and they do Brahmari through labor, and it helps them to go through their labor with less pain medication.
Can you spell Brahmari in case anyone wants
B-H-R-A-M-A-R-I,
to Google it?
B-H-R-A-M-A-R-I, Brahmari, B-H-R-A-M-A-R-I. I also have another website called thebeepriestess.com. We're just launching, so once again, your listeners will just go to a new site. But there is a video on there of me teaching how to do Brahmari. So that's on thebeepriestess.com. People could go there and listen and watch me teaching Brahmari.
So now when you do your workshops, because you're still doing workshops pretty often, do you teach the Brahmari?
Not too often anymore.
Not
I do.
So much?
It depends. Yeah, I usually teach Brahmari, but it depends. But I'll be teaching at the New York Open Center June 9th and 10th, and I'll be teaching Brahmari and drumming.
Okay.
And then in my big retreat in July 11th through 15th, it's the ancient tools of the bee priestess. There'll be drumming and Brahmari, and there's mantras that come from the Indian Brahmari Devi is the bee goddess, and her mantras, Hrim, H-R-I-M or H-R-E-E-M. And that's on the album Hymns from the Hive. I had Amit Chatterjee chanting Hrim, the mantra of the bee goddess, and singing also. I teach that, and...
Well, Lane, let me ask you. You said that in your book, if it's not given away too much, if you can touch on it a bit, you said the primary percussionists in the ancient world used to be women, but they're not today. Which shift? Was it, you know, the patriarchy that destroyed everything and the drummers too, or is it more complicated than that?
No, because the cultures were pretty patriarchal before the women were forced out of being the drummers. No, it was the rise of the newer religions, first Judaism, then Christianity and Islam, that said there's only one God and he's male, and the only people that can officiate and be intermediaries have to be male. And the drum was so connected with the women priestesses, so the drum was banned. And most of my source for this is the Catholic Church itself and some of their texts that they published on all their decrees against the women musicians. And
what period of time did those decrees come out? Was that
well, they started like 400 Common Era or AD and continued. I don't think they've been decreeing against women drummers, but they've certainly still excommunicating women in the priests that are ordaining the women.
Absolutely.
There's a fabulous film called Pink Smoke by a dear friend of mine, Jules Hart, on these women that are being ordained by a renegade Catholic archbishop who has to stay secret, but he takes them offshore in a boat and ordains them, and as soon as they step on shore, the Pope excommunicates them, and he excommunicates the priests that support them, and they do not excommunicate the priests that are molesting children.
Isn't that incredible?
They will excommunicate the priests that are supporting the women becoming priests.
Yeah, it says something about their priorities, doesn't it?
Well, I really urge people to see and to purchase Pink Smoke. It doesn't cost much, and it helps these women. And anyway, Pink Smoke, Over the Vatican.
Okay,
You're concerned about that. And, on one level we go, who cares about Catholics?
Well, no.
Who cares? Why do these women want to be Catholic priests? But, no, everybody on your show should care about this. And if they watch the movie, they'll understand why.
Well, and I've had a few of the women priests on the show, and I've had Father Roy Bourgeois, who's...
He's the one that's been excommunicated for supporting him. Can you believe it?
Yeah,
and it takes away his pension and all of his support, and he's elderly, and he's devoted his life to great causes.
It's really a shame. Well, tell us what's happening with the women beekeepers today.
Well, there are more women beekeepers today than at any other time in recorded history. Now, I think before the recorded history, there were a great many women beekeepers, but now it's... especially now, our bees are in so much trouble, which means we're in so much trouble. It's still happening. Don't think that the colony collapse has been solved or it's over. It's still happening. The main bee, head of the bee club in Asheville, we have 300 people go to the bee club. Asheville has beekeepers everywhere. The main beekeeper lost all 22 hives this year. So it's still... very touch and go, but we're having a fabulous spring all around the Northeast. There's so much pollen, and the bees are very swarming. They're producing so many bees because it's been so warm. And they produce so many more bees that the hives are splitting and swarming. So it's pretty good, but still, we're still losing lots of bees. But people, women and men, are starting to keep bees not for anything to benefit themselves by not getting the honey or the products from the hives, but just to support the bees and try to keep the bees and us alive. I mean, our food supply is dependent upon it. And there is this thing that is happening in women bee sanctuaries. They're making their beehives into like sacred sanctuaries. It's sort of spontaneously happening. They're painting their beehives and putting images of the Virgin Mary or the goddesses on their beehives. And anyway, it's like the bee yard is a sanctuary. And I work often with Deborah Roberts. We co-teach, and she's a master beekeeper. You know, she went and was certified as a master beekeeper, an organic master beekeeper, and she mentors a lot of people. And there's a new college of the Melissas, I think it's out in Ashland, Oregon. And
they're beekeepers?
Well, it's a sacred goddess, and they have to keep bees. And I don't want to say the wrong thing because I don't have the information right in front of me. But Deborah and I both did webinars to them. So we're starting to do that. We're starting to do. And I'm going to be in upstate New York in Rosendale on June 11th for the Bee Club in Ulster County from 7 to 9 or something like that. And I'm going to give the whole lecture. I have an amazing lecture on the symbols of the ancient bee priestesses, the Omphalos, the beehive at the center of the world. And
now, when you say symbols, are you saying S-Y-M-B-O-L or C-Y-M-B?
Yes.
Okay.
No, S-Y-M-B-O-L.
Okay.
There's many symbols, and I've pieced all this together, and they're the implements of the bee priestess, the Omphalos bowl, the libation bowl. It's also called a patera fiale. And these are symbols of their office as priestesses. They have this bowl. They have the frame drum. They have a particular kind of necklace with the Omphalos symbol on it. Just many little pieces of information. When you see the lecture that I give, it's a visual proof, in a way, of how all these symbols are interconnected.
Are you thinking about maybe putting that on a DVD and making that the purchase?
Well, we're editing our last workshop right now.
Okay.
It's like a 5-hour workshop we're editing into a DVD set. Actually, as we talk, somebody is working and editing back in my studio on this. So the lecture will be on that. There's somebody just emailed me. Maybe I can pull the information up while we're talking. And she's putting on a conference on the bee priestess this summer in Utah at a university, at a college.
So, Lane, why the bee? Is it because of the trance-like sound? Is it because it's, you know, the queen bee idea and the honey? Why was the bee the sacred, you know, the sacred symbol, the sacred insect of the priestesses?
Yeah, we're going to have another hour for that. Let's see.
What's the two-minute answer? Is there a two-minute answer?
Oh, dear. Let me see. Well, it has to do with the pollination of our food and our very survival as human beings.
Okay.
So people were aware of that the bees were the pollinators. And then the hive was a great womb, you know. It's a great womb overseen by a great queen laying eggs and maintained by all the honeybees, all females. They have a few drones in there to contribute some semen. But for the most part, it's all this incredible female energy. And they're creating the substance of honey, which is, you know, incredibly medicinal, and the propolis and the royal jelly and all the, you know, nobody can make honey but a bee. It's an astounding substance. And then I told you I've had a immune system, malignant tumors I've been dealing with for a long time. And I did some surgery, but I won't do chemo or radiation. And you see me, I look great. I look fine. I just try not to put myself under such stress anymore. And I'm constantly doing all kinds of, you know, therapies and healing things for myself. And one of the things I did was apitherapy, where you sting yourself with bees, and stung myself along meridians that my acupuncturist chose. And after I did that, it was a real boost to my energy system. But after that, I did it for a while. I even got on a plane with 40 bees in my pocket.
Wow.
But I cannot taste honey now without tasting the mind of those insects. And for me now, honey is just very much, I taste honey and I'm tasting the mind of those creatures, those amazing, precious insects. But they are insects. It's another form of intelligence. But I'm very, you know, if you're become, I'm not a beekeeper, I don't have the time, but I hang around beekeepers and I go to their yards and meditate in their yards and I practice Brahmari with the bees and I'm around them and I get stung on occasion. And so your mind becomes transformed by this huge hive mind, this
wow.
hive mind of the insect worlds. And Aphrodite was one of the great bee goddesses, so was Cybele and Demeter and Persephone and Artemis. But Aphrodite is sort of the great bee goddess, and she, if you think about the bees are traveling from plant, flower to flower, these incredible vulva images of these incredible, the plants have created these flowers to attract the pollinators into it, and you start to understand why Aphrodite is this great goddess of love, this great bee goddess of love, and the functions of the bees going around and actually fertilizing all the plants. Yeah, and that's one part of it. That's one part of it.
Well, promise me you'll come back when you have time and energy, and we can delve into that a little bit more. That sounds really juicy.
Okay,
well, Lane, let's go ahead and mention your websites once again. You have laneredmond.com. You also have whenthedrummerswerewomen.com and thebeepriestess.com. Did I forget anything?
Well, there's a lot more, but those, let's concentrate on those. And actually, since I haven't launched the two other sites, When the Drummers Were Women or The Bee Priestess, you won't find links on my laneredmond.com to them yet. But I encourage anybody that goes now to please put yourself on the mailing list of those sites, because when we launch, there'll be a lot. There's plenty there now, but when we launch, there'll be a lot more stuff there. And I think that's a lot of stuff, and I have a lot of music and that people can connect to on laneredmond.com. And then if you go to that, you can also see that I have a lot of YouTube channels. The Bee Priestess channel is called Kept by Their Bees, youtube.com.
Okay.
Kept by Their Bees. And that's with Deborah Roberts. We have a Twitter for that, too. But if you go to thebeepriestess.com, you can sign up for that. And that's a lot of information for beekeepers, you know, there that comes through that. Deborah has the beekeeping information, you know, the technical beekeeping and the spiritual information. And then I have the ancient, sort of more spiritual information about the Melissas.
Okay, wonderful. Well, Lane, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure, and your work is just incredible. And I guess I'm feeling like I need to ask you this as maybe
sure.
our final closing thoughts. If someone is new to this, if this is the first time they're hearing about the drumming, the bees, where would you recommend is a good place for them to start?
Well, probably laneredmond.com, and because there's lots of videos and instruction on how to see the drumming, and there's a lot of stuff on that site, and you
okay.
can listen to all the music. And then thebeepriestess.com, and those three sites, if they want to go to When the Drummers Were Women and just watch that 14-minute video, and they will get a huge overall history, visual history of the frame drummers, along with the contemporary women drumming today.
Okay. And any chance you're going to be in Southern California anytime soon?
No, I have a lot of students, but I haven't been out in a couple of years, and
okay.
I need to come out, but nothing's scheduled. And I'm going to
okay.
spend probably the rest of the year in retreat and working on getting this information out. But we are really going to move towards you know, making things more available through the webinars and videos and stuff.
Wonderful.
So, Yeah.
Well, Lane, be healthy, and I know you're happy and following your life's passion. So thank you for doing that. Thank you. Because,
well, Karen, you're doing an amazing thing with this show. It's really important, and I think it's really great, and I know it's a tremendous amount of work, and it's so important, and I and many other people are very grateful for it.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you for saying that. It's my honor and pleasure to be able to talk to people like you and bring your work to the world. So thank you so much. And I appreciate you
letting me share
your music with my listeners. And
absolutely.
I'll be playing more of it later on during the show as well.
Well, I appreciate that.
Well, Lane, let me say goodnight. I see Ava is patiently waiting on the switchboard, so I'm going to have to shift gears here and change topics. But it's been delightful and so very informative, and I look forward to going to all of those websites myself.
Okay, great, dear. Okay, and give Ava a hello, and I don't think I've had a chance to meet her, and I look forward to the time when we do get to meet.
Yep, she's got the perfect place for you to have your retreats down in Southern California.
I know. We'll have to do that.
All right. Talk to you later.
All right, dear.
All right, bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Well, listeners, you have just been listening to Lane Redman and one of the foremothers of goddess spirituality and drumming and bee priestesses. Lots of rich, rich, potent information there. So I just want to make a couple of announcements before I get Ava on the air and we spend the rest of the show chatting about transgender and goddess spirituality. I want you to know that next week my guest will be Gail McKeegan. She is going to talk about her book, The 12 Secrets of Highly Creative Women. And after Gail, we have Jean Houston actually on the show. Then on the 24th, we have Laura Truxler. She's a scholar, and she's going to be talking about the sacred feminine in Mormonism, thought with that Mitt Romney character floating around, that that might be something interesting for everyone and sort of timely. And after Laura, we will have Diane Wolkstein on the show on May 24th talking about Inanna, specifically Inanna, spiritual warrior, approaches the God of wisdom. Sounds interesting, doesn't it? And then on May 31st, William Moore will be with me. He would like to chat about pagan gods and goddesses, about his theories about them actually being our ancestors. And then following William, we'll have Amy Peck. She's returning to the show. She's the foundress of the Goddess Studio down in Escondido, and we're going to be talking about magic and manifestation. Also, if you're in Southern California, don't forget that we have the Pagan Pride Healing Fair, the third annual, coming up on May 20th. It's going to be held at the Green Man Store in North Hollywood, and the theme is Heal Yourself, Heal the World. There's going to be some interesting speakers and readers and vendors. I've been invited to give a talk, and my talk is on goddess ecology for a sustainable future, because goddess ecology, well, you know, it stands in stark contrast to male-dominated patriarchal religions with their beliefs and entitlement to rule over women and Mother Nature, and it sure offers a better way to live in balance and harmony with each other and the planet. Also, Julie James will be one of the speakers. She's going to talk about plant medicine and lots of other fun stuff. So that is May 20th. And I will be giving a class, actually, on May 27th called Goddess-Inspired Living. It's going to be held after our monthly Sacred Sunday service at the Green Man Store. Again, we're going back there, and it's close to home. So come to the Sacred Sunday service from 11 to 1. Bring a brown bag lunch to eat and have a break until the class starts at 2 to 4, Goddess-Inspired Living. I'm going to be teaching that with Samantha Sage. So I guess that's about it for now. I am going to unmute Ava and say hello.
Hello,
well, hello,
Karen.
Ava.
How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
That was great with Lane. I listened, and she's so interesting. You have the most interesting people on your show. You're just doing such a service for all of us. So thank you.
Well, I feel blessed. I really do. And well, let me introduce you to listeners, and then we'll start our chat. And I also want to hear about how the conference is going up there, if we can talk about that for 2 seconds. Anyway, listeners, Ava, she is returning to the show. And if you didn't hear her before and know about her work, she's done an incredible amount of things out there in the world. But for tonight, we're just going to talk about her as the founder and presiding priestess of the Goddess Temple of Orange County, which is a woman-centered, all-faiths temple for all genders and the only temple of its kind in the world today. She's the author of Queen of Your Realm, The Queen Teachings for Women, and she's a graduate of the Women's Theological Institute as well as several other priestess training programs. And you'll want to write down the website for the Goddess Temple, and it's goddesstempleoforangecounty.com, goddesstempleoforangecounty.com. So, did you make it safely to San Francisco this week?
I did indeed. I stopped in the little town of Cambria because, now I'm letting your listeners in on my private secret, so don't everyone rush there at once because you'll ruin it for me. But this is a darling little town on the coast. And I actually stay in a little hotel in San Simeon, which is about 2 miles north of Cambria. And it's right on the beach. It's the most relaxing place. It's my little private secret writing retreat. And I go there for a week at a time and just look out the window at the ocean as I write to the next chapter of whatever I'm writing. And I come up to San Francisco when I drive up here. I come in stages, 4 hours to Cambria, and then 4 hours to San Francisco, and it's a lovely little stop on the way.
And you're up there attending some conferences, and you're going to actually be presenting yourself too. Did you want to mention any of that?
Oh, yes, it's the ASWM, Association of Women in Mythology, fantastic, brilliant scholars. And today we were treated by so many incredible presentations, one after another. These women are on the absolute cutting edge of critical thinking and intelligence and scholarly work. It's just awe-inspiring what they are bringing to the table in terms of the feminism and advanced thought on matriarchal studies. Today I attended the Matriarchal Studies Conference, and so many interesting things are being done with regard to matriarchal studies and where that's going in the future. Max Dashew is here and many others. So it's just been very exciting. And then tomorrow is the ASWM, the beginning of that conference, and I will be presenting due to the kindness of Dr. Marguerite Rigoglioso, who wrote Cult of the Divine Birth, which is an incredible piece of work. If your listeners are not familiar with that, it talks about ancient parthenogenesis and the women being able to give birth without men. By using magic and electricity and light, it's a real thing, and it's a talent and ability, a magical ability that we've largely lost. Although parthenogenesis is certainly still a physical fact of biology, there's lots of living beings that still reproduce by parthenogenesis, which is the female reproducing herself, basically cloning a perfect version of herself without a male. Snake, and it's very interesting. So she has invited me, and she's just fantastic, fantastic, brilliant woman.
Well, as you just talked about the parthenogenesis, and you said, an ability that we've lost, it made me think about what Lane was actually talking about with the bee priestesses and the healing that she's acquired. And, I mean, we didn't get a chance to get into it a lot, but in the back of my mind as I was listening to her talk, that was my very thought, that, we have just lost that ancient knowledge and, we've lost that direct connection. And it's thank goodness for some of these scholars who are are reawakening these ideas. And maybe 10, 20 years from now, maybe we will get close to to remembering and relearning what we once knew.
Right.
Well, Ava, tonight our topic is transgender and goddess spirituality. What made you want to speak about that?
Well, it's something that's really, really coming up at the temple, and I think it's just a harbinger of what is to come in society. I think this is a hidden topic in human society, I should say in American society. I think it's a hidden topic, and now it is being brought to the fore, and we must deal with it, and we must deal with it intelligently and compassionately, the way many cultures have, cultures that are far more emotionally intelligent than we are. And American culture is backward when it comes to what is typically called transgender. And that's not even a term I like. I think it should be far more specific than that. But
well, yeah, it's vague, and I want to get into that a little bit. I want you to clarify, but it seems important in a way that and we didn't plan it like this. Of course, it just happened this way. But with President Obama coming out yesterday saying he's for, you know, same-sex marriage, and you know, when you think about how many people across the country can't even wrap their mind around that, and it seems like such a normal thing, you know, such a normal thing to me. And so you can imagine, some of these people can never take that next step and look at transgender in a positive light, I don't think. It must be terribly difficult for transgenders in our society to be who they are and love themselves and feel loved. And so I guess let's get into all of that. First, maybe start by saying what you mean by transgender.
Well, I believe, and there's certainly many, many definitions of transgender, but and I believe they prefer, and I'm just learning this myself, so I'm educating myself as I go along. Several transgender people have told me that it's not actually correct to say transgendered with an ED, just say transgender. So that's something that I've learned myself just recently. And so, wanting to be as respectful as I can of all different groups, I'm dropping the ED and just saying transgender people. But, you know, for purposes of this discussion, transgender could mean those persons whose identity does not conform to our American societal conventional mainstream notions of male or female, and people, human beings, who feel that the gender they were assigned at birth is either a false description of themselves or an incomplete description of themselves. So that's how I define transgender. And
well,
I'm sure
Bodo, Cher's daughter who now go, you know, experiences life as a man. Would that be one example that maybe people have seen out
sure.
in the world?
Sure, absolutely, absolutely.
Okay.
I think Christine Jorgensen was one of the first, you know, in the 50s, one of the first most famous transgender persons, and there have been many others. So it's really now coming to the forefront, as I think it should, because these people are legitimate. Transgender, in my view, incorporates, covers a wide range of what should be other genders that are identified in our culture. But they're not. They're erased. And, the African-American comedian Chris Rock jokes about this, and he compares African-Americans to indigenous people of this continent. He says something like, black people discriminated against? Yeah, but how about those Indians? At least black people are recognized in American society. At least you see them. And then he says like something like, you never see an American Indian family just chilling at Red Lobster. In America, Indians are totally invisible. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's being flippant, but his point, I believe, also applies to transgender persons. Women, and, you know, your radio show deals a lot with women and patriarchy and how women are treated in a patriarchal society. Women may experience horrific mistreatment and misogyny and oppression at the hands of our patriarchal culture, but at least women as a group are acknowledged and visible. Transgender persons have been, at least up until just very recently, by comparison, virtually erased. They are not allowed to be present at all. And I think this is a crime, and I think it causes untold, mostly hidden suffering. And everybody, people like you who really care about justice, people like me, really have to come together to stop this erasure. These are human beings who you need a place in our society, not to be discriminated against. They're one of the most oppressed groups in American culture.
Well, and it makes me think about, you know, when I was, you know, doing research on goddesses in India and culture and things like that. In India, there are different groups that actually, well, it depends from, I think, from different, you know, different culture to different culture. And forgive me, I'm probably not using the exact right words, but it seems like some places someone who is transgender, it could be sacred and revered, while in another part of India, they may be the lowest caste of all.
Right.
You know.
Right. Well, that's absolutely true, and it varies widely. I believe that the way different genders are treated by society is directly related to how much that particular society has absorbed the cruelties of patriarchy. And the more patriarchal a society is, the more they want to jam, the more that society wants to jam all human beings into two genders only, male and female. Those are your two choices, you know, jam yourself into one of those boxes, please, no matter how you feel, no matter what your parts are, just those two. No others really exist. If you don't match up to one of those, well, you know, too bad for you. Spend thousands of dollars trying to recreate yourself so you do match our version of reality. You know, come as close as you can, but, you know, buy into our idea of just two genders. And other cultures have been so much more intelligent. I think the Bugis of Indonesia are a fantastic example of this. They have, I believe, five genders, and they have the Bisu, which are sort of beyond gender. They're sort of androgynous. They have the Kalalai and the Kalabai, and each one is its own gender, and each one, the Kalabai, has the anatomy of a male but feels more aligned to women's ways as defined by that culture. They don't have a womb, and they don't bleed. They don't have the blood mysteries. But they do not consider themselves women, nor do they want to be women. You know, they don't rush for sex reassignment surgery. They don't go for hormones to change their bodies to copy the physiology of a woman. But neither are they men. They belong to their own gender. And they have their own place in that society.
And what is this culture again? Where are they?
This is the B like boy, U-G-I-S, the Bugis. It's in an Indonesian group.
Okay.
So Bisu is another of their, B-I-S-S-U. It's called gender transcendent. And they combine all aspects of gender. And they're not necessarily connected to any kind of anatomy, but they're just considered like all-encompassing of all genders. And they dress in a type of garment that's not worn by any other gender, and it incorporates both the qualities, you know, that the culture considers male and female. Sometimes they're called the androgynous shaman.
Hmm.
And so, you know, and then they've got the Kalalai. That's another gender altogether. This is a person with the anatomy of a female. But they feel more aligned to men's ways as defined by that culture. And just like the Kalabai, they don't want to be male, and they're not considered to be male. They don't desire sex reassignment surgery. You know, and they honor these different genders. And this is sanity. This is much more sane than trying to force a person. You know, what happens in our culture, we've just got the two boxes, and if you are born with a mental predisposition towards being having female ways, and yet you're born with a penis, then all you can do is try to become woman with surgery and hormones, but you can never really achieve that because a woman has always been defined by cultures, many, you know, most cultures, as being the one who has a womb or is born with a womb and the one who has the blood mysteries. That's what a woman is. And for transgender persons to attempt to become something that they can never become, you know, if we say we can define what woman is, this plays right into the hands of the patriarchal mindset, and it is dishonoring of the gender that these people actually are and the magical shaman nature that they could be bringing. You know, the tragic thing is when one being tries to become another, two really terrible things happen. They never truly succeed at becoming that being that they were never born to be. And they never really find their true soul fulfillment that could have been found in embracing the being that they were meant
right.
to be.
Well, and you made a good point that, I mean, and even with transgender, it's not one type. There are multiple types of transgender. So there's different boxes within the transgender community.
We need to have as many boxes. We need to get with reality.
Right.
We need to have as many boxes as necessary.
Or do away with all the boxes.
Or just do away. You know what? That is a very good point, Karen. Maybe just do. And when I talk to young people, you know, like under 20, some of them are saying, let's do away with gender altogether. Why jam us in a box? Can't we just be individuals and have our sexual preferences and don't, you know, but I don't know that society is ready for that.
No, not here in the United States, that's for sure.
I do know that the patriarchal mindset, if we buy in, it's very similar to women having, a huge number of surgeries to try to conform to some conventional idea of beauty, you know, like having huge breast implants and that sort of thing. We're like buying into the idea that you're broken and there's something wrong with you, and now you have to go and have a surgery at great cost and great pain and even, you know, threatening to your life possibly, so that you can become normal and acceptable. And this is the patriarchal mindset personified. And they do it to women. And now transgender people who should be rebelling against this patriarchal mindset, and they should be leading a movement to have our society name and identify what their gender is. I don't believe anybody was born in the wrong body. I think it's society that is telling them that they're wrong. And what they need to do is stand up to society and say, no, my body and my mindset, the way they are combined, is perfect for me. And I have a place in this society. And I think when they go to that position of, I have to remove my penis, I have to take hormones, I have to make all these expensive, painful, and possibly life-threatening adjustments to my body to become something that patriarchy tells me I can become, this is just wrong. And it's falling into the essence of the patriarchal mindset, which is going to control, which is trying to control everything. And here's what it says. It says, we're going to tell you what woman is. She's not a magical, life-giving being created by goddess to create, carry, birth, nurse human life on earth. Woman is what we say she is. We can define her in any way we wish, without a womb, without the ability to give birth, without the ability to menstruate, nurse a baby from her body, turn blood into milk. You know, that may have been what a woman has always been, but hey, no more. Now a woman is what we decide, what we create. We erase from our minds the reality of your ancient female blood mysteries. We erase your mysteries. There are no mysteries. We have it all laid out. under our bright lights on our science tables for examination and experimentation and manipulation, we can create woman at will with our technology and our tools and our hormones and our surgery. Forget reality.
It's gender genocide. What we can create,
we can label and redefine, and what we can redefine, we can control. We control this new reality that erases the ancient understanding of what woman is. We are the ones who define woman now. And so when that takes place, the meaning of what it means to be a woman, if you call a transgender person a woman, it erases the very meaning of woman as the womb bearer and the carrier of life and the birther of babies and the one who can change blood into milk and nurse a baby. That's what a woman is. And it's not that transgender persons should be disrespected in any way. They have their own magical powers, but they should not try to become something they can never be, and they should not be calling, you know, a sex reassignment. They should not be called women. And I know this is inflammatory, and I know people, you know, there are people who are having a huge problem with this point of view, but it's reality. Because if you call a person who was born anatomically with a penis, and you make a hole in their body and call it a womb, it's still just a hole, because a womb is an organ. It's a magical organ. It is not just a space or hole in the body. And you are erasing everything that woman is. This is a patriarchal erasure of both transgendered persons and woman. And it's the beginning of like a whole cyborg thing of creating human beings on operating tables.
But that's scary.
But
if any of my listeners are transgender, I would really invite them to call in so we can, you know, have their voice added to the conversation. But I wonder if you've obviously been thinking about this a lot. So let me pose the question to you. The person who was born with a penis but doesn't feel like a man, in their mind, they otherwise identify as female. For all I know, maybe they even have breasts. That might even be possible.
If
they think they're a woman, feel like a woman, except they don't have the uterus, then is it cruel to not allow them that self-identification, you know?
Let me ask you this. If I was raised, if I'm a white woman, I have a very light skin, I'm Caucasian. If I was raised in a black family and I wanted to identify as a black person, and I said, well, listen, I'm a black person because I identify as a black person, would that be reality?
No.
No, it would not. It would not be reality because I do not have the physiology. I do not have all of the outward markers that indicate physically what an African-American or African person is. And this is the same with – it's not cruel to state what reality is. If a woman is the human being with a womb and the blood mysteries, menstruation, birth, lactation, menopause, then, if that's what a woman is, then – nothing else really is woman. Everything else is its own gender, and you can't just decide mentally to be. You might, if you're born with a penis and you feel like a woman, that's your own gender. And it needs to be named. You need to name these genders.
Okay, so you've probably said it, and I heard you, but let me punctuate it. I think what you're saying is rather than have people who are transgender try to fit into either the male or female box, and of course we said let's just do away with the boxes, but you know, let's just go with this box idea, then we need to create a whole different box rather than
we need to create many, many more boxes.
Yeah, we need more diversity.
As many as actually accurately reflects the physical reality, physical and mental and spiritual realities. You know, we've had people come to the temple who have wombs. They've given birth to babies. They've been pregnant. They've carried a baby. They've nursed a baby, and they have a penis. Now, you know, that's, I believe, a true intersex person. Now, you know, we, if you have a womb and you have the blood mysteries, if you can menstruate or you know, have the ability to menstruate and you've nursed a baby and you certainly are a woman. And certainly you're a woman if you haven't done those things, but you have the potential. You know, I've never given birth to a baby, a physical, you know, human child, but I'm still a woman because I was born with a womb and I hold the blood mysteries, whether I've actually carried a baby. But, you know, there's such a continuum. There's male on one end, and then there's female on the other, and there's just a million things in between. Human beings are amazingly diverse. And it's a crime to deny all that diversity and say, well, you only have two choices, become a man or a woman, you know? And on top of that, you have to have an expensive surgery to become something else because we're not going to acknowledge what you really are.
Hmm. Well, you know, I wonder, you know, because I obviously haven't studied this, but I wonder if, you know, maybe this is even a crazy question, but what a psychologist would say about this. And what I'm thinking is, I wonder if any of them have thought so outside of the box as you're thinking, you know, can we go beyond the two-box system? And actually, well, obviously in other countries they have, so I guess I'm answering my own question. It's just, here in the West, it's such a taboo subject, and we force these people into being something, I mean, because they may be something totally different if we had more than those two boxes. If they were able to live their life out authentically, however
right.
they saw fit, without any social, pressure
right.
to conform.
Right. And, my belief, and now a lot of your listeners will not agree with this because this is my own personal, we're going into my personal ideas of religion and spirituality, and we're moving away from, more socio-political facts. I believe that your soul creates your body. I believe that your body, whatever it is an outpouring of your soul. I believe that your soul decides whether you're going to be woman, man, or something else, you know, as yet unnamed in our society. And my message, what I would say to transgender people who have told me repeatedly that they feel that they're in the wrong body, I would say, my gosh, you are not in the wrong body. You are in exactly the body that your spirit created and needed to create in order to do your evolutionary spiritual work on this plane. And, Karen, I believe that what transgender people are here to do is something so sacred and something so holy. They are here. They have allowed themselves, this is a massive, I don't want to say sacrifice, it's not quite the right word, I'm kind of struggling for the right word. It's a massive gift to humanity to choose to be born in a body that is reviled or very difficult to live in. And rather than caving to the patriarchal idea of they must become women, which they can never become, instead they must create their own order. They must, like the galli, you know, of ancient Greco-Roman times, you know, the priests of Cybele, they must create their own spiritual order and gender and have their own way of functioning in our society. And I believe that people who are transgender, I believe they have magical powers that other genders do not have, you know, male and female don't have.
Well, at the very least, I've often thought that they, and you know, maybe this is just naivete, and somebody who's transgender would call me and say, oh, Karen, you're silly. But, you know, my initial thoughts were, you know, we all strive to find that balance within ourselves of our masculine and our feminine selves. But they're sort of closer to it, it seems like it. You know, maybe they're actually a little bit closer to I want to say the words that are coming to mind are the perfect human being, you know, because
yes.
I wonder if they And maybe it would vary from person to person and what kind of life they've lived and, you know, how much, you know, how much they've suffered in our society for being different. But if they didn't suffer, you know, if our society didn't make them suffer and could just accept them for what they are, you know, in a way, they may be the ultimate sacred role model in a way.
Absolutely. And, you know, I know that my position is controversial among some transgendered people, and I get down on my knees before them and I say, please understand, I actually hold you as a sacred being in the greatest of reverence, because like the Indian Two-Spirit, you know, they're shamans, and they have a more far ranging idea of what it means to be human, especially like the Bisu, who incorporate both the male and the female aspects. You know, truly androgynous. They're across the board understanding both sides, and there's, you know, many other ways of being transgender also. But this is what we are being denied as a society, as human beings in this backward, woefully, as you point out so often in so many ways with your guests and with your own personal knowledge and knowing, we are so backward. We are being denied in this culture the incredible spiritual range and power and knowledge and wisdom that could be coming from these sacred genders. And is not, because we are cutting them up. We are telling them they must go cut themselves up and jam themselves into one of our little male or female boxes. And I say, break free of that. Break free of that idea. Wouldn't it be an amazing thing for us to be the creators, people like you and me and transgender persons themselves, to come together and be the creators of an entire new list of names for genders, like identifiers that actually follow reality and human experience?
I think it sounds like an awesome idea, because certainly, I mean, look, you know, we're having a hard enough time just, you know, like I said, you know, some people in this country can't even wrap their mind around gay marriage, much less transgender.
So it's probably ridiculous.
It's probably asking a lot, you know, to expect these folks to come forward in the way you're talking about. You know, that's probably down the road
a bit. Somebody has to lead the way.
I'm willing to start the
conversation about this and make a space for it at the temple. In fact, we've already started. We used to describe events as either for women, which we meant by women, we meant people with wombs or born with wombs, whether they lost them to surgery or not. They're born with a womb and they hold the blood mysteries. That's what we define women as. Or, you know, other events were for women and men. And no more. From this point forward, we're changing our calendar to this more healthy acknowledgement of reality in our society. So we're learning, we're growing. From now on, our events, when we send them out on emails, descriptions and announcements of our events, we'll say, you know, for women, and by that we mean exactly women as we define it, and the other choice will be for all genders. We're not going to say for women and men anymore, because that buys into that patriarchal idea.
Mm-hmm.
That there's only two, and I've realized that I've been doing that all these years, and I don't want to do that anymore, you know? So now we're saying for all genders, we're hoping that, you know, people who care about this issue will meet us, will come forward, and maybe start a spiritual circle for all genders and start to name them and start to have spiritual traditions associated with them and find out, you know, what their spiritual gifts are to our community and let us receive them, you know, in a humble way.
Absolutely. Well, and I commend you, too, because, you know, I mean, the temple has come so far. I mean, it just the fact that it even exists is just an incredible feat of your tenacity and powers of manifestation, and that you have been able to keep it going this long, you know, without some angel or big funder like the Catholic Church, you know what I'm saying? How the church keeps their churches afloat. So the temple started out just women, and then you went from women, and now recently it's for women and men. you know, men can come there more regularly than just the Wednesday night drumming circles you used to have a long time ago. And now you've opened it up even further. I mean, you're embracing even more.
Well, you know, we're doing our best to see what reality is. I'm very big on, like, let's look at reality. What is reality? Well, the reality is that, in my view, women are those with wombs and who were born with wombs and hold the blood mysteries. That's woman. And then there are all these other genders, male and many other genders, too, yet to be named. And they all have a place, and they all deserve their own place in society, however they wish to create that. And we will always hold space for women only, because when I stand in circle and I ask the circle of women to take their left hand and place it on the womb of the woman to their left, and then place their hand over their own womb, if you have a transgender person in that circle who was not born with a womb but was born anatomically male, the energy that is moving, the magical energy that is moving around that circle, stops at the male. It's not that there's anything wrong with the male. You know, males are holy.
Yeah.
And any other gender is holy. It's just a physical reality of, you know, it's a magical reality that wombs are a magical portal, a cosmic portal to infinity and to many, many things that are not well understood by the average person. And so we will always have woman-only space, no matter how many people complain, no matter what people say about that. There will Sunday services, you know, will probably always be women-only. But we would love to open up even further to serving the entire community. And we have all genders come to Wednesday evening services, men, women, any gender. And we would love to incorporate even further, even beyond that. We would love to have some kind of group at the temple that represents transgender interests and ways of being, to explore that, to help us understand that. And I want to make a space for that.
Interesting. Well, that's awesome. And you know, we probably both know people who could potentially facilitate that for you. But let's do the flip side of this. You mentioned that your views are controversial. So obviously, I think I'm reading from that you must have said this to someone who was transgender, but it met with resistance. What's controversial about this? Why would transgenders, I assume, not been in agreement with you on this idea?
I think because, for one thing, and I'll take responsibility for this, for one thing, I don't think I clearly described or explained this position up until just this last year. I think I was fuzzy in my own mind about all of this, and we have a statement on our website about Two Spirits that was written in 2009, and it does not explain these things that I've been talking about with you. So that needs to be rewritten, and I ask any person, transgender, male, female, of any gender, who reads that to recognize that was written in 2009. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just not complete, and it's not representative of, you know, the evolution of my personal thinking and my understanding of this situation. So when I've spoken with transgender persons about this in the past, mostly anatomical males, either pre or post surgery, who wanted to come to Sunday services, when I would describe this, I don't think I described it as clearly as I'm describing it to you now. That's the first issue. The second issue, I think, is very understandable, and that is that they have completely, those people who disagree that we should be able to have woman-only space as we define it, woman with wombs, they have bought so completely into this idea that you can only be one or the other that it doesn't even enter their minds that they might be their own sacred gender that's different from male or female. And so they know they're not male. They know that, and they're right. But when I say they're not female, then all they can do, since those are the only two boxes that they've, you know, bought into, if they know they're not male and I say they're not female, what does that do to them? That just completely erases them in their mind. They have nowhere to go. They're nothing. And that's not what I'm saying, you know? That's not what I'm saying at all. And that is not what they should be thinking. They should be thinking of themselves as far more holy and sacred and valuable, infinitely valuable to society. They are not a mistake. It's society that is mistaken. They are here for a great purpose, and I believe that great purpose is to help us as a very unevolved society, patriarchal society. I believe they are here to help, like, bust open this bullshit, this idea that we have, this limiting idea. I think transgender people are here with a great soul mission, a great soul purpose. And personally, as a minister, as a priestess of a temple, I want to support that coming forward, that evolution, that unfoldment of that great purpose.
Okay. Well, it makes me wonder how these folks in these other cultures, like you said, in Indonesia, it makes you wonder what that history was like, you know, if they've just been accepted into the community as, you know, lovingly, as just, if their communities have always been open-minded, you know, or if
right.
they had to go through some transition period too, you know, some learning curve. But that would be an interesting study, actually, to see, how these communities evolved over time, and how these people see themselves, and how
right.
their community views them too, because I can't even imagine how difficult it must be for someone who's transgender to try to exist in our society and not be damaged by the cruelty, you know, be damaged by the lack of acceptance. It just must be a horrendous thing.
It's got to be utterly horrendous, and I don't even pretend to understand it, except for the fact that I'm a woman living in a patriarchy, and so to that extent I understand what it means to be oppressed. And so I have some glimmering of an idea what it means to be oppressed, and both, you know, oppressed and erased. And these other cultures, like the Indonesians and the Indians, it's different for every culture. You know, cultures are at different places in their evolution and their understanding, and patriarchy has, you know, made pretty much big inroads in every culture on Earth now, almost every. There's only a few matrifocal matristic cultures, you know, still left on the planet, but which are much more open about gender. But like the Indians, you know, they have the hijra, and the hijra are, they don't even prefer that term because it's sort of derogatory. They prefer kinnar, I believe, K-I-N-N-A-R. And, you know, there's thousands of them, and they all come to this one festival. I can't remember what time of year it is, but, you know, it's like 20,000 hijra come to this one city in India, and they have this massive festival, and these are anatomical males. They have penises, and they prefer to live and dress and work as women. But they are marginalized by their society. They have a lot of different mixed reactions. Sometimes they're kind of looked on with, like, amusement, like, you know, these funny people. Sometimes they're reviled, and a lot of them work in very marginalized, they're like sex workers, not by choice, but, you know, they become prostitutes. They're really shunted to the edges of society, and they find it hard to find work and that sort of thing. So it, you know, they suffer tremendously, and yet they are who they are, and Goddess did not make a mistake. I firmly believe that, you know, when Goddess made anatomical males who want to dress and act like women, and work as women, and wear, you know, wear makeup and wear clothes like women, I do not believe that is a mistake. I believe that is their own sacred gender that we simply do not allow because we are too ignorant and unevolved.
Well, and it probably goes the other way, too. And I mean, it probably goes the other way, too, do you think? I mean, people that are born a woman with all the working parts who maybe identify more as male, that probably happens as well.
Oh, my gosh, yes, yes. The Calabi, the Calali. You know, look at a butch lesbian. I have several friends, women friends, who are butch lesbians, and they're accosted and harmed all the time in so many ways by our culture. You know, people have one friend, and she was asked recently, somebody came up to her. We were having lunch, and somebody came up to her, and she said, "Why do you?" She was just, like, accosted by this stranger and said, "Why do you wear clothes? Why do you wear men's clothes?" And my woman friend looked at her, and she said, "Well, you know, I bought them. I paid for them. I didn't steal them. I'm a woman, so they're women's clothes. I'm wearing women's clothes." And so, you know, and she, when she goes into bathrooms, she's, you know, rudely treated by women who, you know, think she's a man. So we have a lot of misunderstanding about,
right,
you know, about all of this gender stuff in our culture. And I just can't even imagine, because I happen to fit into, you know, I happen to look like a, quote, normal female. I really do not have, you know, a deep understanding of what it must be like to walk around in a body that is constantly challenged by society, and we must change this. People who care about justice and who care about evolution of humanity and care about peace and love and acceptance and not just tolerance, but like celebrating diversity, we must all work together. This is not just a transgender person's issue, you know, that does not affect the rest of us.
Yeah, it's an issue of equality, you know, just like the gay and lesbian thing. It's always an issue of equality.
Right.
Well, Ava, I want to thank you for these insights and this progressive thinking. I want to make sure I have time tonight to play Lane Redman's final Delphic Oracle in its entirety. I teased people with about a minute of it twice, and so I want to close the show with it. But so I can give you about a minute or two to sort of a wrap up. Is there anything, you know, you want to add to this that we haven't said?
I speak to transgender people all over Southern California, and I ask them humbly to please contact me, tell me how they feel, tell me what I can do to support them, tell me if they want to join me in creating something, a sacred church that recognizes their order, whatever it is. I am there to assist them. I am there to help that process along in whatever way I can and support that, because I want our society to evolve into greater and greater understanding of reality. And we're pretty far away from that right now.
Well, like you said, it has to start somewhere. Well, Ava, thank you so much. Please tell all of our friends hello at the conference for me. Have a wonderful, wonderful trip, and I'll see you when you get back.
Thank you for your fantastic work, and thank you for bringing us Lane Redman. That was so great.
Okay. And listeners,
right,
if you want to look into the Goddess Temple a little bit more, let me repeat the website again. It's the name, goddesstempleoforangecounty.com. And we have just about perfect time left to play Lane Redman's final Delphic Oracle. So here goes, before we don't have enough time. Good night, listeners. And remember, be back with me next week because we have Jean Houston on the show. Good night.
Thyself.
above all things, speak the truth. Do nothing to excess. Accept the gifts the gods have given you. Choose not the advice of others. Make your own nature your guide in life. The king. The well-crafted temple has fallen to pieces. Apollo dwells here no more. There is no more oracular laurel. No talking spring. And the voice of the water has been silenced. All is finished. But here are my words. The muse cannot be silenced. She sings within us forever. Her voice will be heard again. Know thyself. Know thyself.